Welcome to the Pastured Pig Podcast,
where we share the successes and challenges of raising pigs on pasture.
We talk to producers all over the country,
from small homesteads to large commercial pasture operations.
Whether you're new to pastured pigs or have been raising hogs for decades,
we hope you hear new ideas and new perspectives on pasturing hogs.
Here's your host, Troy McClung.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Pastured Pig Podcast. Today, we're going to take a deep dive into a very specific topic, and it's something, if you guys have raised pigs on pasture for any type of resale, then you probably can share along in this conversation. Today, we're going to talk about processors and the woes, the processing woes we've experienced. But we're not just going to hang out on the negative, of course. We're going to kind of flesh out why we run into some of these issues, how we as a farmer and a producer need to take ownership of the communication triangle we have between the processor, our customer, and us, of course, and manage that. And then even some advice on when you run into issues with processors, what's the best way, or how's the best way to navigate those. So Rob and I get into that. He and I, we've got a list as long as our arms of issues we've run into with processors in the past. So we share some of that as we get into the discussion. So I appreciate Rob coming on the podcast. We give some details of who he is. He's been on the podcast several times before and enjoy having conversation with him. So let's get into the discussion. Today, we are going to an oldie but a goodie, a familiar. I shouldn't call you an oldie but a goodie, but we're going to a familiar voice. Let's keep it there. So we're going to Rob Dowdle of Dowdle Family Farms down in the lovely Deep South. And Rob and I are going to have a discussion today about processing woes. So we're not only going to share our woes, but we're also hopefully going to share some of the tips and suggestions coming out of that. So first of all, welcome, Rob. Glad you decided to come on the podcast.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Troy. Thanks for having me.
Yes.
I always enjoy our conversations. It gives me stuff to think about, whether I know what I'm talking about or not, as in today's conversation.
That's right. Yeah, I always say, if I don't know it, I'll wing it, see what I can come up with. So. All right. So first of all, let's I think people, if they follow the podcast, obviously they've heard you talk before. I think your voice is recognizable. But tell us real quick, give us that 20-second elevator speech about where you are and what you do down in Mississippi.
So I'm in North Mississippi, the Lowndes County area. I'm a seventh generation farmer. My kids are the eighth generation. We raise beef cattle, honeybees, and pastured pork. The honeybees and the pork are recent additions to the farm over the last probably 6 years or so.
Yeah, awesome. Very good. Very good. So yeah, Rob comes from a obviously a point of experience. So he and I have talked about topic specific things on the podcast before, and this is something that hopefully, if I can convince Rob to do this on a regular basis, that he and I just seem to have a pretty good banter back and forth, and I think that helps raise the value of the podcast when it's not just my voice, or it's and maybe a brand new person when we're talking specifics. Again, when we get into discussions about people's farms and setups, I think that's always valuable. Learning new stories from new people. But when we get into these topic specifics, these drill downs, I think it's very helpful to have somebody that I'm familiar with talking to and get into these type of things. So that's kind of the structure we're looking at. Rob's going to get a really huge commission. You're going to get all the money that I make off this podcast. I'll split it 50-50 with you. How's that?
sounds like a plan.
Exactly. Yeah, what's half of nothing? All right.
Yeah, really.
That's right. This is for editorial purposes only. Okay, so let's get into this. And Rob and I, we kind of went through some topics, and we're not going to just have this be a woe is me, this processor stink, they ruin our lives type of thing. And good day, good luck with your pig processing. We're gonna have hopefully some, end on a high note, have some light at the end of the tunnel with some tips and suggestions. But first, we want to talk about some horror stories. So Rob, let's just play a little bit of vocal tennis here. Give me the first horror story that pops into your mind when you talk about taking your pigs to processing and the processor having some shenanigans going on.
Well, probably the most obvious that sticks out in my mind is I sold a pigs. We do pigs and beef for custom processing. And I sold a pig for custom processing, and the label, you know, they don't use my labels. They use a custom label. So it's the person who owns the animal, it's their name and not for resale, and then the cut of meat. But when they got their meat back, I mean, they paid $800 or $900 for this animal, and then $300 or $400 in processing. And I got a text with a picture, and it said, "You sold me goat," and it said "goat chops, not for resale." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness!" And fortunately, the guy was, you know, he's got enough of an attitude that he knew it was pork, but he kind of rolled with it and went on. But you know, that is not. Ooh, that is that one was pretty rough.
Yeah, that's a head scratcher, and that definitely gets you. I mean, it just gets you thinking. You know, the thing I think that keeps a lot of us farmers up at night when it's time to take your animals to the processor is like, how do I know they are keeping track of my animal as it goes through that facility, and how do I know that what's packaged with my label on it comes back as actually my animal? Yeah, what are the odds? Yeah, that's the type of thing that kind of keeps you up at night.
Well, oh, the funny thing is the very first animal, now this was a beef, but the very first animal that I had processed at a local processor here, all they do is custom processing. And again, I raised it, split it with another guy who paid for half of it, took it to the processor. First of all, they did not follow my instructions. And second of all, we did not get my meat back. Mm. Now, fortunately, and it was presented as my meat. I wanted the bones for broth. I mean, I use the pork bones for broth. I do everything, but because I know our animals. And for me, the broth is one of the best things about having your own animals processed, whether they're custom processed, whether they're done for resale. You know, those rich broths, they're nutritious, they're great. They add so much value, not just to the animal, but everything else. Of course, then once you make the broth, you can feed them to your dogs or whatever else, mm-hmm. and return the calcium to the land. But all that to say, I didn't even get I said, "Oh, where are my broth bones?" He went into another freezer where they were labeled for resale, which technically this isn't even a USDA inspected plant. I mean, they can buy whole, right. You know, they can buy whole stuff and cut it up, but they can't anyway. Oh man, it was an absolute debacle. Yeah.
Wow.
It was bad.
Yeah. That's not good. All right. I'll share one real quick, and then we'll take a little side path here that's popped in my head, but, and then we'll get back into a couple more horror stories. So, probably the one that sticks out to me the most was many, many years ago, many, many processors ago. I had, let's see, what would be 18? So that'd be 9 pigs. So I had 9 pigs being processed in one batch, and we're going to have all the ham smoked and the bacons, of course. Well, fortunately, in this smoking run, he just had my hams go in, and it was all my hams. And he tested, you know, they tested when it came out, and there was listeria. So it came back hot for listeria. So, of course, they have to destroy all of those hams. And so he calls me, and I go down there. We talk, and he's like, here's what I can do. He said, I can order some hogs in from so-and-so. I can get them processed and get you those hams replaced. You know, sorry for the delay. And of course, we had that conversation, like, well, are you getting pastured pork? Is it this? Is it that? And, you know, the things that make my, you know, the key selling points of my product and why I can charge what I charge for it. And he's like, well, no, this is just going to be like CAFO type stuff. It's like, well, I'm not interested. And so I'm there just absolutely heartbroken. It's like, well, I've lost all of these hams, 18 hams in total. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, he did actually make it right the best he could. He paid me my retail price for my hams. Now, granted, I had to go back to customers and tell them, hey, I can't provide you. I can provide you with the rest of your pig, but he's just not going to have any hams with it, which was a bit of a drag. So that was probably our biggest out-of-pocket loss there. But like I said, you know, when it came to actual cash flow, he did make up for that. But that was really tough. That was, you know, something that's totally out of my control. And you know, you bring an animal to the processor and you expect them to take care of it for you. And, you know, it is what it is. All right. So, Rob, before we do another round, tell me,
Let's tell. I think most people, and I apologize for the coughing and the grunting. This is a long story, but I'm trying to get over all this. But I think most of our listeners obviously know what a processor is and some of the different classifications of processors when it comes to custom and USDA. But maybe let's hit that real quick. So obviously we have our custom processor. What's your best definition of kind of that the custom processor that can kind of the lower side, you know, smaller processing?
So the custom processors are when I sell whole live animals to people, and of course they then in turn have their own animal processed. Most states, and of course federal regulations, allow, you know, someone to have their animal processed. It doesn't require a USDA inspector to actually approve or state that the animal's healthy, la-di-da-di-da. I'm just selling the whole live animal. I deliver it to the processor, and of course people have a down payment that they put on it beforehand. And then they pay for their own processing.
Yeah.
That's the best way I know it. Did I even answer the question?
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. Cause it's this idea that there's not the federal government involved, but you're not able to take cuts back home with you and say, okay, I got one pig processed for Dowdle Family Farms and I'm going to bring it home and I'm going to sell the bacon separately, the pork chops separately out of my own freezer. You can't do that with a custom processor's processing.
Correct. I can use it only for my family. You know, we can only use it for our families. We can use it for, we can give it to somebody.
Exactly.
Arguably.
I love that.
You know, and we can invite somebody over to have a meal with it. But
yeah.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah. And ask them to donate. Yeah, for every bite of pork you have, please donate 50 cents. Yeah, no. It's really kind of funny when you think about it. That's what always cracked me up was, it's like, I can give this meat away, but I can't sell the meat. So when there's money involved, somehow that pork becomes more dangerous because, you know, the government has to keep us safe. So the next level would be state processor. Do you guys have state inspectors in Mississippi? Are you one of the states that don't?
No, there's an option for state inspection in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
All of our processors, in terms of regulation, there's an option for state inspection. But all of our processors are USDA inspected.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I most likely wouldn't use state inspection anyway. There's just too many restrictions.
Yeah.
Like I'm shipping some meat to Texas when this next batch of pigs goes to the processor. And because of that, you know, I'll have to have USDA labeling.
Sure.
In Mississippi, you know, if it's state inspected, this is Mississippi's regulations. There may be others for other states, but it can be done for retail. I think to individuals, I don't know if it can be sold to restaurants. I'd have to double check that.
Yeah.
But it can be sold to individuals, and then it just can't cross state lines, I think.
Yeah.
Is my best understanding.
Yeah. And so last I checked, and it's been a couple years since I've looked this stat up, but I was thinking there was 25, 26 states in the union that have state inspection options. West Virginia is one of those as well. And Ohio, and the reason why it sticks in my mind was when I was right after this, you know, that horror story I just told about losing my hams, of course, trying to find a good processor. Well, just across the river in Ohio was an incredible processor. They were a state inspected for Ohio. And since this is well in the past, the statute of limitations expired, I can share this now. But I used to go over there and have my pigs processed and bring them back. And because their facility was incredible, it had the Ohio state inspection stamp on it and everything. And I was doing just small runs at that point. And a guy was like, you really shouldn't be doing this. He said, but okay. And it was a great facility. I mean, it was one of the best facilities I'd ever used. Loved it. But he was literally 5 minutes on the other side of the state border. So he's in Ohio. And that's what just blew my mind. I'm thinking, man, what a handicap this business has geographically. Facility is great. I mean, I'd go in there and lick one of the floors in the processing room. The place was so clean and not have any issues with it. And, you know, great customer service, great packaging, all of that. And he was only, you know, an hour and a half away from me. But if you look at it on a map, he actually, you know, the High River, of course, is twists and turns. So his little community sits down in this little bump. So if you look at it, it's like he's surrounded 180 degrees of his 360 radius is population he can't sell into. And it's just like, that's so ridiculous. It's like, for some reason, when you drive across that river, that man-made boundary, then that meat somehow becomes even more dangerous. And I know it's not that simple. But so anyway, so the state level, Ohio, West Virginia, some of these other states, you can sell within, you can sell your cuts within the state, but there are restrictions. And yes, I think you're right. I think there are restrictions as far as restaurants and maybe even something with farmers markets. I'm not sure, but
yeah.
And then, of course, the top level, the level that we probably all should be hanging out in, if we're trying to do retail cuts, of course, is USDA processing. And that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, because always it's always funny how this lays out, but that means they have a full-time USDA inspector. Now, that may be full-time in the sense that, hey, we're only doing processing on these dates, so we only need an inspection on Tuesday, Wednesday type of thing. But that is a full-time USDA employee that kind of floats around different processing facilities. And he has to be there. He, she has to be there to lay eyes on every single animal that comes through there that's going to be processed for resale. Is that correct? Would you agree with that?
Mostly, yes. Yeah. So our processing plant in Kosciuszko, they have 2 days a week that they do USDA inspected meat, and then 3 days or any other day they can do custom processing.
Okay, cool.
And so Mondays and Thursdays are their inspected meat, and it's not just for the slaughter. It's also the inspector has to be there, and I didn't know this, the inspector has to be there while they're cutting the animal up.
Ooh, yeah.
So has to be on site and available to view the meat, which I think it's really frustrating. I think it's good. Ironically, you know, my inspectors, the people who inspect my meat, see much more of my animal than the 30 seconds they'd have seen of, you know, the animals that go through a, if that 30 seconds, that go in an assembly line in a main processing plant.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're, of course, we've never had any problems. There are a few little irritations about that, of course. But yeah, that's my understanding as well.
Yeah, I remember. That's the thing. That's what always trips me up, because I've done some state level and some USDA level, and I think at state level in West Virginia, the state inspector has to be there when the animal's put down, because I don't know that they're there when they're actually cut up. Although I do know they inspect the livers and stuff, so I don't know. I can't keep track of it, to be honest with you. But yeah, USDA is kind of what. What if you're going to sell cuts and have the least amount of restrictions, that's where you want to go. But of course, there's hoops to be jumped through. There's most likely additional expense, because that processing facility is, of course, covering the expenses of that inspector being there. So multiple tiers there of processing facilities. So you'll find a lot of, like in our neck of the woods where deer hunting is so prevalent, that we have tons and tons of custom processors, because they're really, you know, during that fall hunting season, that's when they're just, you know, Katy bar the door, full bore processing deer. And then every once in a while, they'll do livestock throughout the year, but never at the volume that they're doing deer processing.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's amazing how much money they make doing deer processing. Oh my gosh. $500,000. One plant here, they were telling me that they do $500,000 worth of business of revenue in 3 or 4 months. I mean, it was just outlandish. Anyway.
Yeah. And it's sun up to sun down working these guys to death. But yeah, they walk out in you know, 3 to 4 weeks with fat wallets, because they've just done hundreds and hundreds of deer. Crazy. Okay, let's do this. Let's do another round of horror stories, and then we'll get into some additional details and how to rebound from those type of things. You go first. I'm sorry.
Oh man, you know, though, I went to go pick up some smoked sausages, and the labels, the inspected labels, were not on my smoked sausage packets.
Hmm.
So the meat was frozen. It was sitting in the freezer. And I asked him, I said, listen, where are the labels? And he said, they're on the package. I'm like, no, they're not. And he came in there, and sure enough, no labels, no ingredients. They put some labels on there, but they didn't get them labeled right. You know, and once you put a label on a frozen package, the the condensation that's frozen, then the label doesn't stick. And it was pretty useless at that point. Of course, there are other labeling issues. Apparently, the person who does the labels doesn't know how to spell very well, or doesn't know how to use spell check. They labeled my retail cuts of pork chops as proc chops with a P-R-O-K.
The old proc chops.
And, you know, that when you're selling a premium, what we consider to be a premium product, whether it is or not, when we are selling a premium product at a higher price, just what people want to purchase are proc chops.
Yeah, that would go right through me, you know, because I'm already trying to overcome this West Virginia stigma, West Virginia farmer stigma of, oh, everybody in West Virginia is ignorant type of thing. And then you're producing, a pig farmer producing a label where you can't even spell pork. It's like, ah. Yeah, because most people think, well, that farmer, that guy's an idiot. Rob's an idiot. He can't spell pork. And it's like, you have to explain, well, it wasn't me that actually did the labeling because of inspection processes. All right, so I'm going to share one that's label related, and this actually just happened in my second to last processing. So this was falls processing, and similar with the pigs. So this processor, and we'll talk about them a little bit more as we get into it. I'm not going to give specific names, but there's only a handful of, so if you're in West Virginia, you're going to be able to connect the dots pretty quickly. They're a good processor. They're trying to get the bugs worked out, and it's just they're so close, but they still have issues. So I had I think this first round was only five or six hogs, so it wasn't a big run. And they took them in, did all this, you know, did everything they needed to. Things went well. But I knew that they were outsourcing their smoking because they just haven't been able to put a smoker in-house yet. So they were outsourcing their smoking to southern part of the state. Again, all above board there as far as that goes. But it's one of those things where it kind of piles up. So there's a bottleneck when it comes to smoking. So, hey, your non-smoke meat's ready to go. Come get it if you want to. So we came and got it. And it's like, okay, it'll be next week on your smoke meat. Next week. It'll be okay, one more. Yeah, we had a delay. It's going to be another week. So finally, after like, I think it was 4 weeks, which always makes me wonder, it's like, okay, where is this meat right now that it's 4 weeks hanging out somewhere? Is it decaying? Is it frozen? Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But so 4 weeks go by and they say, it will be ready Wednesday. Come by and get it. So I call them Wednesday morning, confirm, yes, it's going to be ready. I even say, well, I'll come by after lunch. That gives you guys time just in case there's anything there. So I show up at like 2 p.m. on Wednesday. And they're trying to get the bacon together. And they're like, oh, we're just kind of finishing up. You know, it was in the freezer. We're finishing up labeling it right now. And we'll have it in a second. So I ended up hanging out there for like an hour, hour and a half type of thing. And they bring in all the bacon.
Oh,
it's all packaged up. Toss it in the truck and get down the road. And I get home and take it out. Well, what they did, I guess because they were so far behind, that the stuff was not ready. It was probably wasn't even packaged when I got there. What they ended up doing is just throwing handfuls of bacon in the bag. So instead of having nice 1 pound vacuum sealed bags, I had everything across the board. Yeah, you pick up one package, it's like, my goodness, that thing weighs a ton. But they labeled every single one of them as 1 pound. So I've got my scale at home and I'm putting it on my scale. It's like, that's a 3 pound pack of bacon and it says 1 pound on it. And oh, so aggravated. I'm just like, I can't. I mean, you know how shenanigans that looks like for me to take a marker and cross out 1 pound and put 3 pounds or 2.5 pounds or something? It's like, there's no way in the world a customer is going to be like, what is this turkey doing? This USDA label says 1 pound and he's trying to put his thumb on the scale type of thing. And I called him. I said, I can't believe you guys did this. I said, that really just, I mean, that's a kick in the pants. I said, I would have been fine with saying, hey, come back in 2 days and get it, and we'll make sure we package it correctly for you. I would much rather have had them do that than just throw everything willy-nilly in bags and zip it up and have 1 pound labels on everything. So it was just one of those head scratchers. It's like, come on, people, use your brain on this stuff. You know, think this through. If you're worried about delaying me two more days to get a good product, then delay me versus get me out the door with something I can't resell.
Okay. So was it it wasn't frozen when you picked it up?
You know, that's what's funny, Rob. I try to, thinking back on that, it was frozen. So I'm trying to think of, I think they had it frozen in bags and was not labeled. So they were post-labeling it. So they must have just cranked out a whole bunch of labels that said 1 pound and just say, hey, take those labels and slap them on every pack of bacon you got. Yeah, and not realizing that they were varying in weights. So I don't know. It's been a head scratcher, and I've gone to them again this last process. He went to them again, and almost, I would say they were 90% effective. So like I said, they're working out the kinks.
Yeah.
But okay, so let's talk about this, and then we'll get into, I think this really dovetails into our second talking point about, you know, questions and building a relationship with your processor. So Rob, from your perspective, this is kind of a loaded question. This is what's fun about being the interviewer versus the interviewee. What is wrong with processes? Are they all just stupid? No, I mean, why do you think, and I mean this in seriousness, why do you think processors struggle with what they do? And I know it's not they're all stupid. Why do you think they struggle with the issues that we, everybody can share with horror stories?
Well, I think, and it's a lot like us as well, all of us have this tendency sometimes to, we fail to view the process, the perspective of the people we're interacting with. We can't imagine why some Yahoo would label, you know, a pig as goat. They don't necessarily understand that, hey, this is a huge deal. Or they don't understand that, you know, when you're labeling your bacon and you got to cross out the 1 pound mark and put 3 pounds or 4 pounds on there, that it looks, you know, like a bunch of Yahoos did it from Mississippi or West Virginia.
Right.
But at the same time, they don't realize that, you know, we're selling a premium product. I'm surprised that your processor, you know, paid your prices for those hams, rather than just replacing it with their own pork. We've had somebody try to do that with us. I'm like, I can't, you know, I'm selling a product here that's pasture raised. It's a very, very different product. People want this, not just some conventional stuff, but they'd go to the grocery store. And so, you know, many times I think processors don't really understand things from farmers' perspective, because meat is meat a lot of times. My processor, the one I use the most, and I've had some issues with them. I've had issues with all the processors I've used, and mostly around the labeling. You know, but they have a difficult time finding just labor, skilled labor, you know, meaningful, you know, any kind of labor. And so their big struggle is trying to find competent people to work in the plant to do skilled jobs or even unskilled jobs, apparently learning how to spell pork, or recognizing that a goat is a pig, you know, is not a pig, or a pig is not a goat. I think, like, my processor, I didn't even know what smoked sausage options were available with my processor. And I'd asked him. He's recently sold to, he still works there for another year, but last April he sold to two young guys who bought the plant and are working in there, and things have improved dramatically since then. And in fact, I sent him a text one time, a few days back, or not a text. I called him trying to get some hanging weights on beef and to get some information from them about the different sausages that I could do. And he said, I'll call you back in a few minutes. It turned out as a Friday at 4:30, excuse me.
The old phone.
I forgot to silence it. That's right. But the processor at 4:30, I tried calling back. They were about to leave, and I didn't get an answer. Anyway, he called me back at 6:45 that evening.
Wow, yeah.
Ridiculous. I mean, but that kind of customer service. He gave me the hanging weights, and then he wrote down all the different types of smoked sausage and all that they did, and sent them to me. It was a picture. He emailed them to me, I think. But either way, now that's not as ideal as having a sheet that looks nice and, you know, custom printed and all that, but just that level of detail helps yeah. us as not just farmers who are trying to decide how to have our meat processed and how to help communicate that to our customers. But that level of customer service can be really, really helpful. But I think a lot of it is they're just, you know, so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my biggest frustration, Mississippi State, and I need to be careful here and take a deep breath, USA, for a second. But Mississippi State received a grant to build a multi-million-dollar processing plant. We're 30 minutes from Mississippi State. The processor I normally use is an hour and 45 minutes. Mm. And so, and they had called me asking to, they needed some pigs. They do a lot of research and they need pigs and that kind of stuff. So I took 8 custom pigs, paid $800 for labels. Instead of just having a label maker there that they could approve some generic labels, I have to, in both the processing plants that I've used the most, I've had to have custom labels printed, retail labels printed wow. specifically for me, and then have those labels approved. And they didn't even use my labels. They used their own labels for the stuff that they sell through their retail store. And then after begging me to bring animals, they won't even answer the daggum phone. I can't even schedule meat to be processed with them anymore after spending $800 on labels that they've never used. They just don't think that's the reason I use the processor I use in Kosciuszko, because I called them in December. I had 4 beef scheduled. They weren't quite where I wanted them to be in terms of being finished out. And I'd spent 5 days in the hospital. Actually, I went in the day that they were scheduled to go in, and I could have gotten the beef to the processor, but I wanted them to be in better shape. That I called the day before, they allowed me to schedule it 28 days, 30 days later. And, you know, that's the kind of service. They understood where I was coming from. They had some flexibility, and they worked with me. And they're so often, I think we get frustrated because we can't sell proc chops, or we can't sell stuff. And those are huge problems. I mean, absolutely huge problems. I'm not trying to undermine that at all, but we've got very few options, at least in my state. I've got I now have 3 processing plants within 2.5 hours. I've got several others in the south part of the state, that I can use, but you know, I'm trying to build a relationship with a processing plant that understands how I like things done, how they do things, and how I can communicate that to my customer to make it as seamlessly as possible. And so often, you know, they don't view things from our perspective and we don't view things from their perspective. And I think that's where so much of the problems lie.
Yeah.
And if we can view things from their perspective and they can view things from our perspective, it helps resolve a lot of the issues.
Yeah.
If we can not get angry and yell and scream.
Yeah.
When things don't go as planned.
Yeah. And yeah, that was great, man. You unpacked a lot of things there. And getting back to that original point, I think the key is, like you said, perspective, that we don't look at it from their perspective. They don't look at it from our perspective. And we're going to get into here a little bit about how to maybe help that situation. But yeah, I think from what I see in our area that processors, this is very skilled labor to process an animal entirely. Now, there's obviously some areas that of that process where it doesn't require skilled labor. I mean, putting meat in a bag and weighing it and that type of thing. Yeah, you don't necessarily have to have a lot of skill in that point. That's an entry level position, but I always say
it does help if you can count and spell. If you're in that position,
yeah, there's certain parameters that need to be considered there for sure. But yeah, you know, I think of when I think about this, I always tell myself, okay, you remembered the last time you processed a whole hog on farm, what it took, and I always say for people that really want to gripe and complain and all that, it's, you know, you need that perspective. You know, go back to when you've processed an animal or processed a pig on your place and just see what it takes, and understanding how, yeah, I can kill an animal and cut it into chunks, but to dispatch an animal properly, to skin it properly, and to actually cut it into cuts that look like the cuts are supposed to be, that takes a lot of skill. So A, it's skilled. There's not a lot of youth coming up that, you know, that come out, hey, what do you want to do for a career? Oh, I want to butcher animals. It's kind of a dying skill, I think. Then of course it becomes competitive market for the skilled labor. It is hard work. I think there's a time you do age out on some of that stuff because, granted, technology is allowing things not to be as heavy as it was. You're not lifting as much, but you're still doing a lot of lifting, still a lot of work. So I think there's wear and tear on the body. And I think at least in our area, it seems like the margins are tight. So when you have tight margins on profitability for a company, obviously the highest expense you have usually is labor. So you have to pay just enough to keep them from leaving, but you got to pay little enough to try to keep those tight margins from being a loss. So I think those are the things that these processors are running up against. There's turnover. I mean, that was the thing about our processor that we're using. They had a great front office lady. I mean, she was incredible. And so the first year we were there, just, man, it's like she was Johnny on the spot. So she was really, really skilled, and she was young. And of course, you know, what happens when you have a skilled, ambitious young person that's working in whatever, you know, they're recruitable. Yeah. And so if somebody's doing their job to recruit, they find that individual and say, hey, you're awesome. Come over here, make 20% more and do this. And that's what she did. She, you know, she's starting her career. It's a no brainer. Yeah, I'm going to go here and expand my career and utilize my skills to make more money. And so it's tough. You have to pay to play in that situation, but when your margins are tight, then you only got so much threshold. So that to me is, you know, we got to give the benefit of the doubt to some of these processors and what they're struggling with. But then there's others that I think are just, they're handicapping themselves, A, because they don't necessarily have a business acumen. So, I think the processor we use now, they've invested in software on the front end, which makes things much more trackable. And I'll get into that, you know, the pros and cons of that a little bit later in our discussion. But that there's processors I've used before too that are still doing, you know, everything's still carbon, carbon copy, handwritten receipts. And, you know, your cut sheet is whatever you bring in, they just throw it at the processor and say, hey, here's what the customer wrote down. See if you can do this type of thing. And so technology is working against them. They're not necessarily tech savvy in that and not taking advantage of those things. So it allows for human error to pop up more and more. And of course, just like you said, that very nature of human error when it comes to workload, that when these guys are just swamped and they're trying to get things done, then that's how a goat becomes a pig or a pig becomes a goat type of thing, because they're just covered up. And then even processes. I see that, like the place in that I mentioned in Ohio, that guy knew how to do job flow. So his process that he had in, he had these checks and balances as that animal went from the kill floor to hanging to processing to grinding to packaging. He had these really good processes in place that had redundancy checks and really helped eliminate these opportunities for just, you know, just stupid stuff to happen, like something be called proc or something to be labeled incorrectly or you know, put in bags that are not the right weights, all those type of things. I don't want to say that and Rob and I, of course, not implying that at all, that every processor is just ignorant. It's just there's a lot of challenges they face. And we as farmers, as producers, we have to help them the best we can overcome those challenges. And the way we do that is we be as upfront, we be as communicative as possible, and we just have to build that relationship. You know, if we come in screaming and cussing and throwing things every time something's wrong, then they're going to be like, okay, this is the last guy I want to help because he's a pain in the neck. But if we come in and say, hey, yeah, I understand this is a problem, we need to get it resolved, but let's do this amicably and let's do this with a clear head, then you start to build that rapport. And that's what I was able to do with our USDA processor in that first mix-up. Spoke with a manager. We talked about things. Yeah, I didn't have these huge demands. You're giving me this, you're giving me that. I just waited to see what they would offer. What do you offer? okay, yeah, to make this right, we want to give you this. Okay, I think that's fair, but how about maybe this as well? Yeah, okay, yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, they waived the processing fees on X amount of animals on one of the mistakes that they made. And, you know, that helps me with my bottom line. So Rob, if we as we segue into this, so our listeners, they've heard 38 minutes now of horror stories and issues. But what, from your experience when working with your processor, what have you done that helps the process flow smoother?
Nothing.
Perfect. You did so great. No. Segue.
So, I'm learning this very, very slowly here. There are, you know, of course, communication is always key in terms of whatever. There are some things that I think for me personally, it depends on whether we're talking about USDA inspected meat or custom processed meat, because it's a little different for each one. I think there's more chance for goof ups in the custom processed stuff. Hmm. Not necessarily major goof ups, because it's fine if it's labeled goat. It creates a customer issue, but it's not like that can't be sold. It's not like they can't use it or anything else with compared to something that's not labeled at all for USDA inspection. But, you were talking, going back to your Ohio plant, I think, that workflow that they use and the software that helps track that. Well, the processing plant that I use, everything is written down in a notebook. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, and there's a lot of, there is room for error there. I haven't had a whole lot of problems, actually, believe it or not, with the cut stuff in this processing plant. They've always followed my instructions, whether my instructions were good or not. But a lot of times I think there's just having a very helping customers, like if it's a custom processing, Troy wants to buy a pig from Dottle Family Farms and it's going to be processed here. Okay. Troy doesn't know anything about pigs. Oh, you do, but let's pretend it's Troy Aikman, sure. I guess. So Troy Aikman's buying a custom pig from Dottle Family Farms and doesn't have any idea how to have it processed. And this is where using the building the relationship with the same processor to me is so important, because I know how that their workflow works. I know how they process stuff, how they tend to do specific cuts, how they label things. And so now if it's pigs, hey, you're going to get, a couple 20 to 25 pound hams. Do you really want all those hams cured? And it's going to cost you another $1.50 a pound mm-hmm. per ham for it to be cured. Or helping them know particularly what to expect with my processor, and then helping them know, listen, the processor is not going to give you the option necessarily for the neck bones back or the trotters or jowl bacon. With beef, there's a lot more variability. Let me jump to that for a second. But like for beef, the tri-tip or the teres major, those are often, even hanger steaks sometimes and skirt steaks are often just ground, because a lot of people don't use them a whole lot.
Yeah.
But those are very good cuts, in specific instances, very, teres major is a really good cut of meat. Nobody knows what it is. And as such, so I've got a document. It's kind of clunky right now, but this is how the animal's broken. This is what they're going to be asking about. Mm-hmm. And then helping them try to be able to articulate it, not for me to stand in the way between them and the processor, but help them know what to expect when going into that communication and clear expectations help things a whole lot on my end, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to jump in real quick because I really like what you said, and I want to underscore that to people. And this was something you had mentioned in your notes before we even started talking. Excuse me. But this idea that between custom processing and USDA, there's a variation in the relationship. In custom processing, it's a three-way relationship, a relationship between the producer, you, the farmer that's raising the pig, your customer who's buying that animal, and the processor who's going to process it to that customer's specifications. So you as the farmer are the one responsible, usually, in communicating with the customer to make sure they understand even what you can get out of a pig. And I remember, you know, when we were doing a lot of custom work, explaining to somebody when they wanted, you know, boneless pork chops, but yet they wanted bone-in, they wanted pork loin, but they also wanted bone-in pork chops. And, you know, some of the things that rub against that, it's like, okay, well, I want baby back ribs, but I also want this. Like, well, okay, you can have things one way or the other. Or even explaining that a sliced ham, and I'll never forget this, I had several customers the first time I did, offered sliced ham. And so what that is, of course, is what we call ham steaks. But it's sliced ham on the cut sheets. When I'm going over with that, they're like, okay, they think they're getting a spiral cut ham like you go to the store and get, right? So when they go pick up their meat and they're like, where's my ham? It's like, well, there it is. And, you know, 55 pieces. It's like, well, that's not a spiral sliced ham. It's like, well, that's not what we were offering type of thing. So there's a three-way communication there in custom work. But then in USDA processing, if you're bringing it back to sell as cuts, then it's really you in the processor itself speaking, because the customer really doesn't have a say in that yet, because you're going to then sell, hey, here's how I've got the pork chops, you can take it or leave it type of thing. So I think that's important to look at the structure of the process. But being able to communicate with the processor first and foremost, and making sure they understand, so when you communicate back to the customer, that helps. Now, let me ask you, Rob, because I'm, again, speaking from my experience, when you do custom work, are you the liaison between the customer and the processor when it comes to asking questions or explaining the cuts available? Or are you saying, hey, no, just call the processor, they'll answer all your questions on how to fill out your cut sheet?
Okay, that's kind of loaded. I always have the customer talk with the processor directly in terms of how they want anything cut up.
Interesting.
Because triangulation, in terms of communication, triangulation, there's nothing worse than having unless you got four or five different points of error. Triangulation just makes things worse. So I always have them communicate directly with the processor. But because I know how the processor works, I know what they call stuff, I know what a lot of their options are, and the processor doesn't have the best, they don't have any cut sheets that they print out. They just call the person and say, hey, how do you want this done? How do you want this done? So I prepare my customer for how to communicate with my processor. Even those who have had custom animals done with other farms, I always communicate with them. This is how you communicate with my processor. So when they say something like, do you want your hams cured? And they say yes. Well, unless they specifically specify, they're going to come back with a 25-pound ham.
Right.
Well, you know, I don't know about you. Well, you got some boys, but, you know, me and my wife and my three daughters, we're not going to eat 25 pounds of ham all in one go round. You know, I mean, I'm a big boy and eat like a big boy, but I don't do that much. So, you know, make sure you have it cut up in 3 or 4 pound, whatever manageable sizes that you expect, because that's just the kind of stuff. I think we as farmers have a responsibility if we're selling custom animals. You know, we're selling animals that are 2, 3, 4 times as expensive as what they can buy from the grocery store sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
We're selling a premium product. So let's make sure that they get a premium service. And it's irritating dealing with customers that don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And when they have a question, somebody asked me the other day, this was about beef, but they were asking about, they've already purchasing beef from us, but they were asking about pork. But in the midst of that, I talked to the husband, and his wife was on speakerphone about this pig. And she said, hey, can you get summer sausage with beef? I don't know the answer to that. I said, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll find out and get back with you. And that's a little bit of a pain in the neck. to call the processor and figure out, you know, exactly what they're talking about. But I'm happy to do it because I, whether the answer is yes or no, you know, they're going to wind up paying $3,500, $4,000 for a whole beef. I want them to be happy with what they get. They're going to pay, by the time they do processing or whatever with this pork, they're going to be paying $1,000, $1,200 for pork. Well, for a whole pig, but they're going to be paying a lot of money for this thing. That I take great care in. I'm trying to, it's imperative and it's my responsibility as a farmer to make sure that they get what they pay for. It's just like people ask me, we've got a processor closer to us that only does custom work, and people have asked me to drop stuff off there. And I said, I'll drop them off if you want to. It's the processor that didn't give me my meat back and didn't follow my instructions. When I picked up my meat, they weren't very clean there, but that's a whole nother story. But I said, I'll do that. But I'm just telling you, it's worth driving an extra hour out of the way and paying the extra 20 or 30 cents a pound for vacuum sealed packages from this processor. Because my processing plant is a USDA inspected facility, even though the inspector doesn't mess with the custom stuff, they have to track every single animal and ensure that it goes to the right place. And because of that, there's a, they know that they're getting an animal, but it's worth driving the extra distance. If they're paying $1,200 for a pig, $3,500, $4,000 for a cow, for something that'll, the vacuum sealed packaging, I mean, I'm eating stuff from 2 years ago that's still good.
Right.
I'm not, I wouldn't sell it, of course, but it's stuff that got caught in the back of the freezer and we're eating it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's just one thing that I think so often farmers make a lot of mistakes. We all do. I'm not trying to bash us, but if we can help understand things from our customer's perspective, you know, let's help them, help give them the best experience we possibly can so that they have a good relationship with us. But also, if we stop farming, that they'll visit another local farmer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're paying a lot of money. And it, you know, if I can't spend 2 or 3 hours, if necessary, talking with them to make sure they get the premium result back from their premium product, shame on me,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff for sure. Yeah, I think, and it's interesting, you know, it's going to come down to experience. And this, I guess, is just one of the many tips that we're throwing out here for the listeners is understand your processor, their interaction on the front end. So like you said, you have all your questions redirected to your processor. I know there's no way in the world that that would work with us, for our processor. Simply because their front office is so light right now. I mean, I have people call me and say, hey, I've tried calling, getting a hold of them for 3 days in a row, and all I get's the answering machine, and I haven't gotten any calls back. And I, you know, I know I can text the manager directly, and you know, I wouldn't dare give her cell phone number out to the customer to say, text her directly, because that's going to ruin that line that I have. So there's, you know, there's pros and cons of all of our processors, and we just have to, as farmers, we have to figure out how to navigate those. So what I try to do is when I am in the processing facility and we run into these questions, like, I want to understand your all's cut sheet so much, you know, I want to every detail, so that when a customer calls me and says, hey, I'm looking at this cut sheet and it says this and this, what does that mean? It's like, well, it means this exactly, or it means that exactly. So I actually become, I guess, a customer service rep for the processor to some degree, because I know that they're going to have a bad experience if they try to contact the processor directly. And just because it's not, the processor's not going to take the time to answer the question, they're just not going to take the time to answer the phone because they don't have enough warm bodies in the office.
In that case, I'll answer those kind of questions. I try to get all those questions out of the way before they actually give their information to the
sure. Gotcha.
The processing processor, but yeah, it's yeah.
So you know, and I think, yeah, we're kind of on this line of communication as some of our tips before we get into I think our last point we want to talk about is conflict resolution. You know, some suggestions on how to resolve conflict after the fact, but the front end, you know, communicating with the processor, communicating with the customer. there's little things, like the thing that sticks in my head is little nuance type things that the processors have. So with our processor, if you want, so when we go to your grind, so whether you're grinding sausage, bratwurst, whatever the case may be, they have a minimum. So you have to have 50 pounds of grind before they'll do any post, you know, any additional post to that grind. So if you want it seasoned for breakfast sausage, if you want it stuffed as links, if you want an Italian sausage, bratwurst, blah, 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 you have to have at least 50 pounds. And when you look at a custom process and somebody's buying a half hog from you, you aren't necessarily going to have 50 pounds of grind from trimmings, right? Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so yeah. So it automatically becomes this red flag that I have to make sure to communicate with my customers, because they see that if they're working on the cut sheet, it says, okay, 50 pounds. Okay. They don't know. They have the slightest idea, you know, how much trim is going to be there. So what I have to communicate is like, hey, check this out. If you guys want something more than just breakfast sausage in 1 pound bags, then we need to sacrifice something else instead of just trimmings. If we, you know, maybe we grind some shoulder, maybe we grind the ham, maybe, you know, maybe we don't do anything with jowl, but grind it, you know, grinding some of this extra stuff to get to that point. And it's a little frustrating for me that the processor has that restriction, but I understand why they do. You know, it's one of those things where it's not worth our time to take the grinding machine, the mixing machine, get it all cleaned up, get it ready, do a grind or do a flavoring or seasoning of 20 pounds of something, and then have to clean it all out and do it again. You know, what they're trying to do is to keep somebody from saying, hey, take my half hog whose hanging weight was only 192 pounds in the first place, and I want hot sausage, I want some mild breakfast links, and I want some bratwurst. And it's like, okay, you're going to get like 3 packs of each of those things, and it's going to spend, we'll have more time and labor producing that than we will in making any profit off of it. And of course, that comes back to, you can say, well, you know, maybe do that process with other hogs that you have. That way you're doing more volume. Well, A, they've got to have the volume, but B, then you have to worry about logistics and making sure you're getting your sausage back and not everyone else's. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things we talk about, especially when it comes to beef, is when you buy a beef from Dowdle Family Farm, you're not getting hamburger. Or let's say you buy a bunch of hamburger. You're not getting hamburger from 600 cows thrown into a big grinder and all grind up, and you're getting a little bit of 600 cows. Yeah. You're getting the grind from one specific cow that stood on this pasture, on this farm, in this part of Mississippi. And yeah, that's part of our selling points, right? So we have to look at those things. There's the issues that come along with being small and having some of these specific custom steps. But when you start running into minimums that aren't labor effective for the processor, then there's some pushback there as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. My processor has a minimum of 10 pounds for grind stuff, which I appreciate. I mean, for my retail stuff, it's not a big deal. I'll, you know, if they do 50 pounds, for most things, it doesn't matter unless I'm just trying a new flavor. But that, yeah, man, 50 pounds minimum, that's... which I normally encourage people to grind the hams anyway.
Yeah.
If they're buying a whole hog, you know, a third to a fourth of the meat is going to be ham. You may like ham. Now, if half of it were bacon, it'd be fine with me, with most people, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, that's, you know, the ham's just, you know, using it effectively, I think, is, yeah. I usually have those ground for my retail stuff.
Well, and that's the thing, and I think that's what we as farmers have to look at with the processor, you know, because that's just fine print on the cut sheet. Yeah, it's just a little asterisk beside the grind, and down here it says 50-pound minimum. It doesn't go into a paragraph explaining why. It doesn't detail, hey, examples of, well, if you do this, right? It's just an asterisk, and it says 50-pound minimum. So somebody has to explain to the customer, and we have to make sure the customer understands that. And so this, in my situation, that falls back on my shoulders. But in this last, like in this last processing we did, I took six hogs on the last one. Two of them were whole hogs that were custom, and then four of them were USDA inspected to be cuts to come back. So what I did in that situation, I said, okay, here's six cut sheets, right? That I'm, when I'm dropping the animals off at the processor, and I went with the manager step by step. I said, these two are custom, so treat them as custom. These four, I want you to treat them as one pig if you can. So when we hit these 50-pound thresholds, there's not an issue at all because we've got four pigs worth of grind, you know, these the trimmings and some of the other hams that we had ground. Throw all that in, so 50-pound minimum doesn't hit. So I was able to get bratwurst, sausage links, a regular breakfast sausage, and Italian sausage, and not have any issues with hitting 50 pounds. And it was just all based on a communication on the front end. It's like, this is going to come back to me as sales. These two over here are custom processing, so treat them as individual pigs. But these, which I know USDA, they can't technically lump all those four together. But when they're tracking together and they say, hey, are we setting up the stuffer or the grinder to do this with a certain seasoning? Yeah, because we've got three other pigs right behind it. They're going to get the same thing. Oh, okay. So that type of communication was very, very helpful. It ironed out some of the wrinkles from the first time, first couple times we went around. But it's just one of those things that's coming back to your point about the relationship. If we don't build that relationship where we can have communication with our processor, then we're not even going to be able to get to that level of conversation and them say, yeah, we can do that for you, man. Yeah, you haven't been a pain in our neck. Yeah, we can do that for you. We'll treat this way and we'll make sure we get you taken care of. And it just comes back to their customer service level.
One little tip for some custom processors. So we've got a guy, I referenced him earlier. He bought a beef and he's interested in doing pork and he's going to split it. If he does it, he'll split it just like he did with the beef with his son. And I said, listen, I can put individual name, I can say Jim Bob over, for one half and Junior over here for the second half. Or y'all can just keep it as one actual animal, and then y'all just split everything when you get home. The benefit of doing that is if you want to try four or five different sausage grind products. Now, of course, mine's a 10-pound minimum, but if you want to try 10 different ones, you can do that, and each of you keep 5 pounds, right. And there's some more flexibility. There's nothing illegal about that at all.
Sure.
Now, if I were to process it and then do it, of course it would be. But there's some ways around that. Of course, with a 50-pound minimum, they'd have to grind both hams and everything but the bacon and the chops to get two different things most of the time. But,
for sure.
Anyway.
Yeah, and that's even what I've communicated with him. It's like, man, you guys got to drop that minimum at some point. And their pushback is volume and all those type of things. They're like, hey, bring me more pigs, I can do that. So yeah, it's one of those back and forths that we just got to figure out with your processor and say, okay, if this is a deal breaker, then we seek another processor. If this isn't, then we just find a way to work around it. But okay, well, We're an hour in, Rob, and for our viewers' sake, I know you and I could talk for the next 2 hours on pigs and not bat an eye, but let's go to our last point and throw out some tips when there is an issue. So you've gotten your pork back, or your customer's got his custom pigs back, custom pork back, and they're communicating issues with you. What are some tips that you would give our listeners to say, how do you resolve this? Do you go in guns blazing, burn the place down, that type of thing? Or what's your standard approach when you have issues?
Depends on how mad I am at that moment. and it's usually about other things.
Remember, you are a representative of the church, remember?
Yeah, well, anyway, good or bad or indifferent. So, I think it's best to do what we can to head off issues. Mm-hmm. And if you mind if I address that briefly,
because
it reduces a good relationship with the processor, an amicable relationship helps resolve a world of a lot of problems. If there's the slightest issue, I mean, I could have gone in there raising Cain about the goat, the proc chops, the labeling issues that they've had. But realistically, it was all said and done. He knew it wasn't right. He explained to me what was wrong. But had I been a horse's backside and ranted and raved and thrown a fit, the thing is he's not going to be that amicable mm-hmm. to resolve issues, whatever. The day that they didn't have those sausages labels, he said, "Where are you?" And I told him, you know, we're an hour and a half away. He was going to bring the stuff back. And he said, I'll run down there. We'll get them labeled and I'll deliver them to you. And I said, well, I mean, he said, if you can wait for an hour or so, we can go on and have the labels applied and everything, which is what they did. Mm-hmm. Also a good relationship with a customer. If you have custom work, developing that relationship with a customer where you spend time talking to them, answering their questions, you know, I can talk too much sometimes and sometimes they want me to shut up.
Yeah.
But so that they know that you're not, so that the customer knows that you want them to be satisfied, that you know that you're asking them to pay a lot of money for something. Yes, it's worth it, but you're also trying to make sure that they get the benefit of that product. I mean, I constantly push people to do a lot of grind in their pigs. Mm-hmm. Most people are, you know, yes, they can do some roast and that kind of stuff, but ground pork, I mean, is one of the, it's so much, I grew up on beef. I mean, we raised beef. Beef, I mean, we had those beef, it's what's for dinner tags from the Mississippi beef industry on our vehicles. We ate beef every meal except breakfast when I was a kid. But it's hard to beat ground pork, especially in a tomato-based soup or sausage or chili, not sausage, soup or spaghetti or chili, something like that. Oh, man, it helps balance the acidity of the tomatoes. But anyway, all that to say, but if they know whatever the reason, you're helping match their how they eat, how they consume food with how to make the best use of this animal, even when things fall apart, if they know you're not trying to take advantage of them, that helps preempt a lot of issues between the processor and the thing, between the processor, you and the customers. Yeah. I think probably I'd forgotten about this one, but one of the worst issues that I had with a processor, I dropped off a beef and a pig for this family. They split it, two siblings split it in their families. The beef was ready in about 35 or 40 days, which is pretty typical, 21 days hanging, give it time to freeze and that kind of thing. I dropped them off August 29th. By January 1st, a customer called me back and said, "Hey, we still hadn't gotten our beef and pork." I said, "Really?" I was thinking it was October. But anyway, short of long story, I mean, it is absolutely inexcusable, for a processor to keep a pig. I don't know whether they was frozen. I don't know whether it was just sitting there in the hangar. I hate to think about what all that turned out to be. But anyway, I say all that to say, and I called processor, and they made it right with the customers. They went up there. They apologized. They said, "Listen, this is inexcusable." You know, they realized they made the mistake. I think we can preempt a lot of the severity of a lot of problems just by being amicable and trying to understand things from different perspectives. The other thing is, for me, most of the time they're usually pretty clear lines of who boogered up.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's all parties. Sometimes it's two or three parties. Sometimes it's whatever. And it's important for us as farmers to realize that, you know what, we should have seen the potential for this issue and preempted it. That's why I spend so much time with my customers that are doing the custom processing, because we have had some of those issues. But it's also, we can throw fits like kids, but when somebody does that with me, I'll do whatever I need to shut them up, but I'm not going to pay attention to them anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah. And I've only gotten rid of one customer. It was somebody who bought honey from us. They said, oh, you add, you know, honey will crystallize, especially a lot of the fall honeys from goldenrod and buckwheat and that kind of stuff crystallize. And I told her that beforehand when she purchased it. She called me and accused me of putting sugar in the honey. Anyway, And anybody with much beekeeping experience, you know, will know about all that. But anyway, all that to say, I gave her money back. And she placed an order for several hundred dollars worth of meat and some more honey on our website. And I canceled. I called her and I said, hey, I'm canceling your order because there's no, you have no trust in me whatsoever.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm not, it's not, you know, I'm not going to do business with somebody that I can't trust. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't do business with somebody that you can't trust. Right. Yeah. That's not, if you want to do that, go buy your meat from a grocery store. You know, there are times we've got to step in and in my mind, if we recognize that, hey, the customer did this wrong or I did this wrong, the processors, I mean, they want business. Yes, they're rushed. Yes, things are chaotic. Yes, they have a hard time finding help. But if we're, most of the time, if we're reasonable and if we step in and say, hey, I messed this up, but, you know, y'all did too. How can you help me out? That's, that helps a lot. But, you know, sometimes we've just, and the thing is if, even if my processor messes it up, I'd rather refund the customer's money, than give them a product that they didn't pay for, like a CAFO pig that somebody just fed corn to, and you know, they don't want that. That's not what they bought for. So I take the responsibility, even if the processor messed up, even if it's at a loss. Yeah. For me, you know, it's not the customer's fault.
Yeah.
In that circumstance.
Yeah. And I want to jump in real quick. You said something there I think is just so key. And that's the first step in resolving any conflict is recognizing culpability. And, you know, are all of us, all parties involved culpable? Or, you know, I think of like your Proc Chop label. That's pretty obvious to say, okay, this is 100% you guys. And if the processor recognizes that and says, yes, that was 100% us, this is what we're going to do to make it right. When there's multiple people involved, like you say, well, I could have been more specific in this, or my customer didn't fully understand that, and now that's trickled down to where this came out the wrong way, then that's where you have to come in and say, okay, I recognize that this isn't 100% you. It's 33% us and the customer and then you. Then, you know, dealing with that first, because if you come in guns blazing and say, hey, you guys totally screwed this up and I refuse to recognize that it's that anybody else has any culpability in this, then that already goes ahead and puts them on edge, I think, and start to think things are unreasonable. And also, if you come in like the drill sergeant thinking, oh, I'm going to demand respect here because I'm going to come in scream and yell and do all this type of stuff, you hit the nail on the head, Rob. I think people are going to just zone out and say, okay, what's the quickest way for me to get this guy out of my office so I don't have to deal with him? And you just look at, you know, bridge burning opportunities there. There's only, most of us only have a handful of processing opportunities. So you can't say, well, you know, forget you guys, I'm going on to the next one. You can only do that so many times, you know, my option, I can only do that twice. And then I'm, you know, I can only do it once and then I'm down to one processor. So it's just one of those things. It's like, hey, we've got to find some resolution here. And when you go in and you're complaining, you're saying, here's the issue, but you're doing it in an approachable way, a reasonable way, you know, not raise voices, not screaming, shouting, all that type of stuff, and have a legitimate conversation, and they recognize, we made a mistake here, we're going to make it right, then you have the opportunity to continue a business relationship. But yeah, I think if you come in here and you're guns blazing and you're ready to burn the place down, then you may win that battle, but you're going to lose the war when it comes to having processor options. Because just like you, I mean, what you did with canceling that lady's order, that was spot on. And I remember having a conversation with one processor when I called them. They said, we don't want to process with you anymore. And it was a misunderstanding. They had called the wrong number and thought I was leaving meat with them for months before I came to pick it up. Long story, but I'm like, wow, okay, I didn't understand why, but you know, they had the they had the wherewithal to say, you're not the best customer fit for us. We'd rather not do business with you. And we have to look at that as producers and say, hey, there's certain customers we're not going to do business with, just like there's certain processes we're not going to come back to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's tough. It's really tough to do that a lot of times. But, you know, that's part of it. Can we throw one little tidbit in here for sure. Processors? I realize we probably don't have more than a handful of processors that would listen to this, and most of them are farmers anyway.
Right.
But if they can, for my USDA inspected stuff, I do not care what processing costs.
Yes.
I mean,
I'm thinking the same
frankly,
thing.
What's your roughly, do you know what your processing costs are per pig for the last pigs you dropped off, roughly?
Yeah, by the time all the post and everything, we're around $250 to $350 at most. Yeah. Rarely do we hit $350.
Mine I suspect for USDA, mine are going to be closer to $350 or so. Mm-hmm. Here's the deal. I've got a several $100 animal, $800, $900 animal. If the processing cost me an additional $100, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, I don't want to pay an extra $100.
Right.
But if it's right, and if the processor will listen to me and help me, and if the processor will listen to the custom customers, not that they have to, you know, baby every single need. That's what we're there for, to help facilitate that process. But if they'll take the additional time to get it right, to do it well, it's worth the extra processing cost for USDA labeling stuff.
Absolutely.
I told the guy that's planning on opening one that I talked to you about, you know, before you started the actual podcast, he's looking at interviewing, and I told him, I said, Mike, if you'll open a processing plant that will, yes, it'd be great if you could do prosciuttos and that kind of stuff, higher value items other people aren't going to do. But the most important thing that you can do is make sure that you develop a culture that listens to customers. You know why people go to Chick-fil-A?
Oh, yeah, customer service is out the window, yeah.
The customer service is out the window, regardless of whether you like their politics and everything else. Regardless of that, it's their attitude is, hey, we are here to serve you. Mm-hmm. And if you go into McDonald's or Wendy's or anywhere else, I mean, it's like it is an inconvenience for you to walk into the door.
Yeah.
And it's a thing where if processors can get that mindset, and if us as farmers can get that mindset for our customers, that listen, we're here to help you. We'll take the extra time. If we have to add another $50 because we spent an extra hour talking to our customers to the whole animal, then do it.
Yeah.
But let, you know, it that helps things so much better if we can look at it from our customers' perspectives. It makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you hit the nail on the head there again. Just, I think if it cost me $100 more in processing, but I got all my bacons packaged in 1-pound packages with the proper weight on them, then that $100 was a steal versus all the headache that I had to go through on the back end of it. Because,
oh yeah,
in that situation, like I said, I can't in good conscience strike out the 1-pound weight on it and put 2.2 pounds and turn around and sell that to somebody that I don't have a really good relationship with. So it became, that inventory became very limited. Only my closest friends who have bought from me for years to say that I could explain, hey, put this in your hand and feel this. You can tell this is more than 1 pound, right? Yeah. Okay. Here's what happened. Are you okay with buying this at 2.2 pounds at, you know, what, $11.50 a pound? And they're like, yeah, it makes sense. I got it. Okay. But, you know, I can't just throw that on my website and say, hey, here's what you're getting. You're getting a 2-pound package of bacon when it's really labeled as 1 pound, and expect there not to be a call afterwards after they get their delivery and be like, hey, wait a second, something doesn't look right. And yeah, I've been like, hey, I'll pay the $100 if you guys just get it right. That's all I want.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it takes more, if it's because margins are too tight or you need software investment, you need infrastructure, then raise your processing fees and we'll all carry this load to make sure we're all getting good quality stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and for custom plants, that that additional investment may not be quite worth the hassle. It is more than they think.
Yeah.
But certainly for USDA inspected stuff, I mean, it is, oh my goodness. Because we look like we're from Mississippi or West Virginia or or wherever, Alabama. That's usually who we refer to as people. But anyway, you know, we look like a bunch of rednecks, which,
yeah.
Anyway, I better not go down that road. I am, but at the same time, it's not like, you know, we're not intentional.
Yeah.
And I have to, but at the same time, I have to remind myself, because I'll get contacts to the website. I'll get emails through our website or phone calls or text messages or whatever. And that sometimes I'm slow to respond, and I have to be really intentional about trying to help that customer, even when I'm out, you know, when my six new breeder pigs jump the fence to get to the boar. And anyway, that's a whole nother story.
That's right.
Or my neighbor's dog chased my cows down the road a mile away because, you know, while we were walking the cows across the road and chased them.
Nice.
Anyway, that's a whole nother story,
yeah,
too. But,
yeah,
you know, even in those moments when it's really crazy and chaotic, I need to slow down and take some time,
yeah,
just like I'm asking my processor to.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to, we should probably wrap this up, but I want to kind of just do a summary statement, and I'll let you comment on this as well, Rob. But I think for those listening, keep in mind that the relationship you have with your processor does reflect on your business as a whole. So just think about this. If you've got a customer and they have an issue and you come back and say, the processor screwed this up, they're a bunch of turkeys. I can't believe they did this. We'll do what we can to make it right, but doggone those guys. Then, yeah, you may win that argument. You may convince your customer that it wasn't your fault, but in the grand scheme of things, your customer's going to be like, okay, why did you choose that processor in the first place? Well, that's the only option I have. Well, when you start throwing those negative things out, people are going to be like, is it worth paying the premium price for this product if I'm always going to get headache? So, yeah, Rob or Troy have convinced me that it's not their fault. It's the processor's fault, but the processor is still part of, you know, it's a cog in the wheel of this farm products being produced. So, you know, whether it's Red Toolhouse or Dowdle Farms' name on it or the processor's name, it's still, you know, the customer's still going to lump all that together, and rightfully so, that they want a finished product that's correct. And if they're paying four times more than they will for retail, then they expect it to be quality food, local, and packaged appropriately for, you know, the best possible experience when it comes down to consume it. The processor is part of that. So while we can push the blame off on them to get through an argument or get through an issue, we are still in bed with them to some degree in our business. And we have to make sure that if we're maligning the processors all the time to our customers, then that actually comes back on us. That we're not going to get out of that argument scot-free.
Yeah. Ultimately, we can say what we want, but ultimately, whether we're doing USDA, state, or custom processing, the ultimate responsibility for our customer satisfaction, it rests on the farmers.
Yeah.
Now, we can pee and moan all we want to about, uh-oh, was that a little?
That's all right.
I may not have said that. But anyway, we can gripe and complain all we want to about it's somebody else's fault. But until we take responsibility, because we may not have another processing option,
yeah,
but we can get the processor to work with us a little bit more effectively. We may not have finished that animal out perfectly or whatever, but ultimately the responsibility lies with us. And, you know, we need people to be, the world needs people to accept responsibility and culpability. And we certainly need to as well, I think.
Amen to that. Yep. Yep. I agree.
Awesome. But,
all right. Well, goodness, we're creeping up on an hour and a half, and people are probably rolling their eyes. So we probably ought to stick a fork in this. But
most of the time when I start talking, people fall asleep. So it may be that they listen to this while they're going to bed.
Yeah,
that seems to be what happens on Sunday mornings anyway.
Yeah, hopefully they're not driving. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, Rob, obviously I'd be amiss if I didn't give you the opportunity to give a shout out about your social media presence, your web presence. If people don't know how to find you online, throw out all the things you got going on there so people can reference you.
Our website address is dowdlefamilyfarms.com. Most of that is our retail cuts of meat and retail part of the farm. At some point, I hope to do a helping folks farm kind of stuff. Most of our YouTube channel at Dowdle Family Farms. You can just search YouTube for Dowdle Family Farms. The bulk of the videos there focus on pigs, raising pigs on cover crops, that kind of stuff. We do some cows and occasionally a honeybee thing. Some of the YouTube shorts I'll upload to TikTok, but I don't do much with TikTok. But anyway, YouTube is really the way. If you want to kind of see some of what we're doing, that's probably the best place to get in touch with us.
Awesome.
So
good deal. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on and talking with me. I know you got more to do on Monday than just talk to me all day, but so I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule and sit down and have a conversation. If I haven't scared you off, I know we got another one in the pipes we're talking about. So we'll maybe address that here in the next month or so as Rob and I come up with some other ideas. But he had some good suggestions about drilling down on feed specific type stuff. So stuff that he's way more knowledgeable than I am on that. So we'll definitely rely on his expertise when we get into those details. But I think we'll just keep plugging along, man. Like I said, I enjoy talking with you, and I think it makes sense to do this from time to time where we get very topic specific and be able to share different experiences we have around that specific topic.
Certainly. Thank you, Troy. Thanks for the work that you do, not only on the Pastured Pig podcast and the Pastured Pig website and Facebook group, but also through y'all's YouTube channel and all. We appreciate everything that you're doing.
All right, man. Appreciate you. All right. Well, today that we're recording this is the day of the eclipse. So if this is the end of the world, then Rob, I guess I'll see you on the other side in a couple hours.
If this is the eclipse, then I stayed up till 11 o'clock last night planting cover crops before the rain that was expected to get here.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Exactly. Yeah. My house payment's due, and I'm actually holding off to. I'm gonna submit it tomorrow just in case.
I hear you.
It's like, man, I'd love to step into eternity, knowing I get to keep from paying the bank one more payment.
That's right.
All right, we digress. All right, brother, I appreciate it. You take care. Well, I really appreciate Rob sitting down talking with me about these processing woes. We hope that didn't come off too negative. We obviously wanted to end on a high note there, give some suggestions and ways to turn lemons into lemonade or proc chops into pork chops. That one still cracks me up. All right. Well, we hope to do some additional deep dive topics like this. So share those with me if you want to troy@redtoolhouse.com or use the contact form on the pasturedpig.com website. And we can do some more drill downs on these type of topics. If you want to just throw a topic out that we find somebody to discuss with, or if you want to be a part of that discussion on topic, then let me know and we can get into that. Well, I'm glad to be back. I'm hoping I can say I'll be back now, not have any other voice or other issues like that, but who knows? Who knows what's going on? It's what happens when you get old, right? Across that 50 threshold. In fact, I'll be 51. By the time you guys are listening to this, I'll be 51. Holy moly. Is what it is. Well, I pray everyone have a great week. Hope you survive the eclipse, apocalypse, tax season, all the stuff that's happening right now. And hopefully the world didn't end. All right. Y'all take care.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of the Pastured Pig Podcast. To learn more about our podcast or to submit topics or recommend guests for future episodes, visit redtoolhouse.com.